You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio. Welcoming back to Counterculture this morning. I am pleased to say good morning to Gilda Kirkpatrick. How are you, Gilda? It's been a while.
Good morning. Yes, it has. How have you been?
I've been very well, and I wanted to get you back on because I follow you over on X, and if anyone is on X and you want to get a really good snapshot of what's going on in the wider world, particularly around culture, Gilda's account is a great one to follow. And I wanted to start off and just talk about a few things. Let's start off with the obvious one. Several weeks back, Gulruz Garaman was finally convicted of her shoplifting charges. And then she did that interview with John Campbell, and she seemed to really lean into her identity, her refugee identity. What sort of thoughts do you have about that, you know, being a fellow Iranian?
Well, to be quite frank, it's just not me, but I think a lot of Iranians across the world have been following her saga. And it is quite embarrassing, to be honest, to, you know, grow up in West, grow up in New Zealand, the most peaceful, amazing country in the world. From the age of, I think, 8, she got here. She's gone to university. She's had excellent education. She's gone overseas. She's worked with the best of the best. And until now, she's performed amazingly, never complained. She's been in every protest, has never had any fear of voicing her opinion, getting into a high profile job. And all of a sudden she goes and, you know, gets caught shoplifting. Nothing crazy, nothing like toys or candies or, you know, the silly things that people, she gets caught shoplifting from exclusive, expensive clothing brands, you know, designer fashion items, not once, but a few times. And then she blames it on PTSD or, you know, her background. If for anybody who grew up in war and revolution in a country like Iran, for someone like her to come and claim that is absolute slap in the face. But, you know, it is New Zealand. People here haven't really, unless they're refugees or they've come from other places or they're old enough, they haven't experienced traumatic stuff that can happen to a person in times of war situation. And nobody behaves this way. I mean, that was such a poor excuse. And I think it was insult to any Iranian who's been through hardship. Mm. But, you know, what can you say? It is one of those things. You can't go and stand there and hold her responsible for what she's claiming. But it is quite disheartening, to be honest. I feel that, okay, you've done something terrible. It's got to do with your own mental state, your own, you know, head space. Perhaps it had to do something with your job, but don't go back and blame it on growing up where you did as a kid and you came here, you know, and you had an amazing life in New Zealand. Her excuse was very poor, exactly the same as her behavior.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you took, you know, for me, if you take race out of the equation, it's poor little rich girl, really, in the sense that she has, as you said, every affluence afforded to her. And she has, you know, I mean, she's beautiful, she's bright. And it's leaning on that victimhood status. That's what it sort of smacked to me. I know there's been talk around people being concerned that they felt that her sentencing was too light. I honestly believe that they would have given her a discharge without conviction. So I was actually pleased that there was a conviction there. But it could have been more.
The fact that you say that says a lot about our expectations and experiences about our justice system, and how it's worked, and how we've got criminal, you know, somebody who's offended over and over again. I mean, we've got people for stealing a couple of, you know, grocery stuff who have been dealt with much harder than her. But like her status you know, and also to get away with it. And and the fact that she gets an interview where it's all pretty much a PR piece for her to gain herself some tears and, you know, sympathy from people. It was poorly done, I think. That's a bad example. And the fact that, you know, John Campbell is sitting there saying, oh, you know, and she's claiming to be a brown woman. And, you know, John Campbell is sitting there saying, oh, for a brown woman, if you would, like, first of all, where does this brown woman come from? You know, I understand if you're African, from the African descent, and you refer to yourself as black or brown, or if you're Maori, or, you know, from the islands, and you refer to yourself as brown. But Iranians nowhere in the world are categorized as brown people, because we just don't have that. And from one perspective, Goris claims she's Iranian, and another, she claims that she's brown. It's like, well, choose who you are. Iranians are from all kinds of color, and we are, you know, from all kinds of different ethnicity. None of us have been brought up claiming that we are brown or white or, you know, black or any, it's got nothing to do with our culture. Yet she kind of uses that as an excuse, or as a, like, a winning card, or a card to get in to this race debate or race category that might give her an edge over somebody else. And I feel, as an Iranian, not only me, pretty much most of people that I know who are here or overseas, when we see Iranians using this brown race card, we are appalled by it. Because this is something that nobody from our culture embraces or uses for us as a nation. And, you know, you use the brown race card, you're taking it away from people who actually have every right to claim that. You know, it is very inappropriate. And to see that, you know, John Campbell is pulling that card also to gain her some, you know, passiveness and sympathy, is appalling.
I often see things like that, though, too, as a dog whistle to their own side, to sort of signal that we are part of this tribe, and we're due the deference. Whereas I think most normies just look at it and go, that's sad, babe. You know, it's really
it is. Look, I wouldn't, I've heard her use that term before, and I gave it a pass, because I was like, ah, she's just playing politics. But when I see that as a criminal, you know, who's offended over and over again, and not for, you know, she didn't go out in the public and take her rage or whatever she claims, PTSD or whatever, at something, someone. She didn't go out there vandalizing things. She didn't go out there doing something unreasonable, you know, perhaps causing a scene or stealing, I don't know, hammer or something from the hardware store. She went out there on multiple occasions stealing designer clothing. That's kind of very selective PTSD symptom, or I don't know what to call it. And then she blamed me, and then she's using the race card of being brown. That is an insult, if anything. I mean, you are having people being prosecuted for braiding their hair in a certain way, or, you know, putting a Mexican hat on, or, you know, and saying, oh my God, you know, how dare you did that? It's a racial thing. And then yet she goes and steals, and then she puts the brown card up, or John Campbell. It's like, what? Like, how rude is that?
Yeah.
If any time, we should get away from the brown card, because you did something terribly criminal that you did out of your own will, and then now you're pulling the race card and dragging a whole race with you. I mean, come on.
So let's look at for me, one of the conundrums I have is that she plays this me from Iran, and I've come away as a refugee, and this is, you know, I've had to leave, and all my family's had to leave. And yet she is so involved and deep in terms of her support and protest and what's going on currently in the Middle Eastern conflict and the nuance. She doesn't seem to get the nuance there between the terrorist organization that runs Gaza and the Palestinian people in the very gray area in between. I mean, I would have thought that she would have had a very, very clear delineation coming from Iran, where you have, you know, a traditional country that is now, again, run by an extreme Islamic regime. So there's lots of convenient line blurring, I feel.
That's true. And that's because really believing what she's claiming. For her, like every other socialist, globalist person out there, it's not really about country or people, it's the greater good. Anything that goes against whatever has been doctrined to their head that is bad, they're okay with it. Anybody with the right mind who is against dictatorship, against free mind, against control and all that, understands that Islamic regime in Iran and IRGC are extremely horrible, anti-human rights, anti-woman, anti-everything that she claims that she stands for. She has studied human rights. She's a human rights lawyer, I think. She worked in that field. You know, she's gone and joined a party that traditionally stands up for, you know, anything that's against everything that the IRGC or Islamic regime stands for. However, and her parents, or she claims that they have escaped Iran and they've come here because of the regime, and she's made statements about the regime. However, fundamentally, when you look at her action, the regime, or, you know, has all these proxies, which, you know, Hamas is one in Palestine, funded, you know, their, you know, the head of their organizations, all those people, they've been getting training from IRGC, from Islamic regime for years. They funded them for years. This is going back now 45 years. Originally, when Islamic revolution happened and Khomeini came to power, from day one, he's always his priority. And everybody after him, their priority has been Palestine. And it is not because they really care about Palestinian people. It is because they hate Jewish people. That's the reality of it. And they want to claim Al-Quds, you know, for themselves as like their token or their symbol of power of Shiism, which is opposite to like the other side of, you know, Saudis are Sunnis and they've got the Kaaba. And so these people want to have their own claim and status. She knows this. She knows what IRGC has done. She knows what Islamic regime does. She knows Hamas is part of the Islamic regime. And yet she goes on supporting them. Her being so contradictory in what she portrays is quite telling about the character that she has. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be expert on politics or politics of Middle East to understand where she comes from, what she does, and the fact that she support, you know, this whole lefty idea has no country, it has no nationality, it is a general idea that doesn't include, but she uses, you know, refugee status, all that to gain empathy or sympathy from people, exactly like she did when she got caught stealing, which is rude.
So, and that's, I guess, part of the nuance, isn't it? So just to be clear for people, that we're not talking about innocent Palestinians here. We're talking about an ideological war that between the Islamists, the IRGC and the Jewish people. I mean, it goes back, what, thousands of years? And this has been brewing for such a long time. And it's there's a lot of nuance and complexity there. Like, so when the missile attacks came across from Iran, like people would say, oh, it's, I think there's a, normies would go, oh, it's the Iranian people, but it's not, isn't it? It's that terrorist organization lobbing pot shots back across to the Jewish state, Israel. Is that correct? Or have I got that wrong?
No, you're absolutely correct. Iranian people literally have been held hostages. This is what, you know, some people don't realize, that there's a distinct, there's a very obvious difference between the Islamic regime and Iran or Iranian people. The Islamic regime, over and over again, they have declared, they have said, there are many speeches from, you know, the supreme leaders, like Khomeini, and then Khomeini after that, that they don't believe in Iran or the Iranian people. To them, the nation of Islam is priority. That's why they've been spending so much money in countries like to set up this proxy terrorist army that they have in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Palestine. And also they've got a whole bunch of people, they're helping all this terrorist bunch in Somalia, in Africa, basically. So their priority is to expand the Shia Islam and via that their power and control over the world. You know, I have, you know, often talked about this, like on my feed and stuff, that people don't realize, you know, Judaism is a very old religion. It's not about expansion, it's about preservation. So that's why, you know, if you want to convert to Judaism, it takes a lot of effort and time. It's not that easy. You know, you have to put a lot of effort and time in order to convert to Judaism. With Christianity, you also, you know, have to attend and put time, and it's not something that these days it's sort of actively that sort of strong like it used to be, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, or, you know, from the start of Christianity, there was a lot of, you know, effort in order to, and you had missionaries that would go to different countries and try to convert people to Christianity, you know, the colonies, and, you know, they would go places, and they worked very hard to expand Christianity. It's because Christianity is 2,000 years old. Islam is the youngest of the Abrahamic religions. You know, it's only 1,400 years old. And it is still in expansion period. It's very aggressive. But the difference between Christianity, Judaism, and Islam is that if you look at, like, if you study Islam, like we had to do, if you study Quran, if you listen to everybody, all these imams, from whether they are Sunni or Shia, it doesn't make a difference. You know, they all would 100% tell you that Islam fundamentally is a religion that there is no end to it. It is about expansion at all times, at any cost. And that's what it's doing. You know, it has been doing it from the conception until now. Nothing has changed. But the population has, you know, because Muslims, you know, have very many children, they expand their families. It is the duty in the religion to do so and convert anybody, you know, go and marry Christians and everybody else and convert them to Islam and have very many kids. And it is part of the religion. There is no stop to it. It is in the West, as we can see, causing issue. And people try to say, oh, no, it's not all the Muslims. It is fundamentalist extremism. Well, no, Islam, fundamentally, if you are a Muslim, this is what it's about. And that's what the Islamic regime is doing. It's expanding. It is part of the nature of the religion at any cost. Ghori is knowing that defending Hamas and standing up for what IRGC is doing in the Middle East is another window to show how contradictory she is to where she goes in parliament, stands there and wants to declare IRGC a terrorist group. You only have to look at her actions to understand how hypocritical her behavior is. You know, it's honestly, it is so upsetting as an Iranian to look at what she does and what she claims in the name of freedom and Iran, etc. So, yeah. Mm. But, like, you know, Islamic regime is also supporting Hezbollah in Lebanon, which is, you know, extremely concerning. They've been doing it for a very long time, and now it's going to full-on war. It has been very hot in that front for months now, but it is getting worse. And I think, you know, I'm still baffled that New Zealand hasn't declared, like Canada has, but New Zealand hasn't declared IRGC as a terrorist entity, because they are. They are supporting financially and in every way all these proxy terrorist armies across the world. And we saw just last week, I think the Arab League put Hezbollah out of, you know, the terrorist entity that they are into recognized army, which is ridiculous, you know, but unfortunately it's happened.
Well, and I guess in the extreme left, they have found a set of useful idiots, haven't they, to help perpetrate what it is that they want to achieve without, you know, and using them as their own proxy within the West. So it's, yeah, it is mind-blowing, really. So the unmitigated and unfettered sort of mass immigration into Europe that's been going on for a number of years. Douglas Murray wrote a really good book, I think it was 2016, The Strange Death of Europe. Now, the European Union elections recently saw a huge shift to the right and a lot of populist sort of votes. So do you think, I mean, I know you know people up in that part of the world, do you think people in Europe now have had this immigration, this unchecked immigration now for close to 10 years, and they're now starting to see the effects and they're waking up and thinking, this is not good for our nationhood?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, the numbers are crazy numbers, as I said before. You know, Muslims, they reproduce a lot, and it's part of the religion. And, you know, there are very many countries, and a majority of them like to migrate to Europe and expand. And now we've got two types. You've got the North Africans, and then you've got the ones from Middle East, like from Pakistan, mm-hmm. you know. So England has got a major issue with the migrants from the Middle East and Pakistan and places like that, who you can see, you know, in their parliaments, they are everywhere. Where with the Europeans, it's more, you know, with like Spain and Italy and France, there are more North Africans that are coming across, or Muslims also. And culturally, they are extremely different, and it will take a very long time to be honest, it's like oil and water. It's just like democracy and the Western values don't mix with the countries these immigrants are coming from, unless they have detached themselves from their religion and certain cultural stuff that they've been brought up with.
And is that likely to happen?
There are people who are from Middle East and who are from, you know, Muslim countries, North Africa, they're extremely open-minded. I don't know if you want to call it westernized, but detached from, you know, their own sort of cultural dictations and values, who are progressive, they are very secular in their behavior and thinking when it comes to, you know, way of life. The secular people are no problem. We have issues with people who are wanting to impose their values, their religious values in the West. And that infringes democracy and, you know, secularity of the West. That's the problem. Hmm. People often say, oh, no, they're all the same. Well, no, because a lot of people that I look up to and I see are people who come from, you know, culturally very sort of religious based countries, you know, that is 100% opposite to secularism and democracy. However, they're well educated and they are the ones who have ability and the insight to talk about the reality of what's happening and sort of give a nudge to the Westerners and tell them, look, you know, you need to do something about it. So I think people who are secular from these countries are a necessity and people must really pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. Westerners who have no idea about what's going on. Then you've got the ones who embrace those sort of religious values and they want to impose it on the West. Now that is the end of democracy and the Western way. You know, we often, people who come from countries like, we always say, why the hell don't you go back? You know, if you embrace those values so much, if you like it, go back. But they don't want to go back. They want to turn the West into, you know.
So that goes to your point before, doesn't it? So it's actually that imperative, the religious imperative for expansionism. Yes. That drives them, not economic migration. So then that probably explains one of the things I've always struggled with is that if you do it from the mindset that they're economic refugees, why isn't it then all like, for example, with the plight of the Palestinian people currently in Gaza? And I keep thinking to myself, well, why isn't the Egyptians then saying to the Palestinians, look, we will help support you in what way we can while this is going on. We'll give you a corridor to let people out. So then the conflict can continue between Hamas and the IDF and the innocents can be protected. But no, the Egyptians popped up. They've got a wall that Donald Trump would be proud of.
The same as Jordanians, because these people have done it before. You know, this is not a new conflict, Like, I remember I used to be a child, you know, in a school at age of seven, eight. And in those days, after the Islamic Revolution, I was eight, I remember Palestine was everywhere, you know, in a school, in our education system. We grew up with following this conflict, nothing about our own people, but about Palestine, because as I explained at the, you know, at the beginning, it's expansion of Islam, right? Yeah. And the Sunnis have calmed down about it. The Shias are like, you know, they are the ones who are pushing, which IRGC, Islamic regime, is behind it. They fund this, you know, and then you've got the Islamic Brotherhood on the other side in Egypt, who are funding all these fundamentalists. They have been for 10 decades in the West, you know, all these university lectures. If you go to all these top universities in America and Europe, you'll see, you know, Qatar is a major fund.
Well, Majid Nawaz talks about that, you know, because he was part of that machinery.
Yes. So it is there. It is, you know, as I said, in the old days, Christians had the missionaries, but Islam is on a height of its expansion in the modern days. It's not coming down and it won't stop unless, you know, the Western countries wake up to the reality and the fact of it, which, like, if you look at certain countries in Europe, they've gone the other way now, you know, which they have no toleration whatsoever, you know. And that, to me, that's no good either. But you cannot go to a gunfight with a knife. You know, I always say you cannot be kind to radicalism. You cannot be reasonable with radicalism. Radicalism needs something as strong in order to be stopped. Unfortunately, It's happening across the world. We are lucky in New Zealand because we don't really have that. But unfortunately, it's everywhere and it's affecting world politics and world economy and the state of, democracy across the globe, whether it's Europe, it's America, it's in the Middle East, wherever it is. Fortunately, a lot of countries in Middle East, like Saudi Arabia, which used to be extremely sort of traditional, they've completely have reformed, as you have noticed, like the new king, like he's very progressive. He's reformed to a point where, there are now alcohol shops in Saudi Arabia. Women can drive, women can do anything, basically. They are trying to open it up and make their country a bit more like UAE, which is, more welcoming, away from extremism, basically up to date with what the world is. But
well, it's interesting you mentioned Saudi, because they are not looking at renewing their relationship with the US dollar, with the petrodollar, because that comes up at the end of this year after 50 years. It's up. So they obviously have a plan, their own plan, and they're not following the radicalist agenda. It's really, I'll be intrigued to see what the Saudis do, because they're certainly not following everyone else, or the IRGC model, that's for sure. It would be intriguing. What else across there? I mean, what are some of the things that you come across outside of what we talked to you? Like, for me, this expansionism, that's sort of something that I hadn't considered, what an imperative that was. So it's easy to sort of, particularly when you look at the birth rate plummeting everywhere, and that not being the case amongst that group. What are some of the other things that you think that Western people like us here in New Zealand just completely miss? Like, it just flies over our head, and it's actually a key point that we just don't get and we should actually understand.
I think there are people tiptoe around it, but the reality is that, no, I've been accused of, of standing up for China and Russia and this and that. No. However, being aware and being, realistic about facts doesn't mean you're supporting something. The role that China is playing in the world today must be recognized. They have said it, their officials have said it. They are the superpowers, not America. America is not the superpower of the world. That is a factual thing. Yet people are very scared of saying it. It's like, well, it is what it is. China has got a massive role in the Middle East and in the going ons in the Middle East. They are not a nation that will get involved in full-on wars and put their nose in other people's business in that way. However, financially, economically, they have got everybody under, their thumb, basically. And they are a massive player in what's happening in Middle East. And one of the reasons that, for example, Saudi Arabia or all these countries in Middle East are getting, they're saying, oh, US dollar, this and that, they don't want to partake in the old rule, is because of the coalition that China and Russia have in the world. There are the superpowers, well, Chinese and Russia, to a big extent they are. And they've got all these countries that are traditionally big role players in terms of oil, gas, etc., on their side. And, that's why, for example, Saudi Arabia and all these countries in the Middle East are now gone the other way, because they've got their own superpowers to promote, deal with, and, benefit from. And, this would have never happened under Trump, because Trump is a businessman. He's never been a politician. So when he was in power, for us who come from, those troubled areas, we could see that, as a president of the United States, he wasn't following the traditional political game that Americans have been playing for very many decades. He went in there as a businessman. He just wanted to make it good for his country and everybody else. And those guys respected it. And as we saw, his relationship was good even with North Koreans. And then all of a sudden the Democrats come, they follow the traditional old-fashioned, decades of, political games and stupidity at the cost of every other nation. Look at what's happening in Ukraine. Unnecessary, hundreds of thousands of lives wasted, unnecessary. The war should never happen.
Is it a case that those countries are led by strong men, strong leaders, so therefore they'll only respect other strong men and strong leaders? And it doesn't, so therefore you've got someone like Trump, who is a businessman, but he is disagreeable and he is very sort of strong in terms of leadership, in terms of business, and will not suffer fools, versus Biden, who has got really, I mean, let's face it, we all saw the debate. He's out to lunch. He doesn't know what day of the week it is, but those behind him have an ideological backing. So then you're trying to fight an ideological war in an economic playground, aren't you?
Exactly. Just look at the scenario. Imagine, presidency of China and Putin and, I don't know, leaders, the king of Saudi and all these people, right? These countries that are extremely strong in the international game of economic and politics. Do you really think they look at the White House painted in rainbow color and, they think, oh, what a great progressive, inclusive government. We should do business with these people?
Yeah, yeah.
No, to them, at the end of the day, they are trying to gain the best for their own nation, despite of inclusiveness and all this sort of ideological lefty things. They don't care about that. And, they don't care about leaders who don't understand economical gain or respect for their own people, They take advantage of those people. Like they look at, for example, the leaders, the regime in Iran, they use these people. They use them because they can see they don't give a damn about their own nation or their country. Iran has made these deals that, are 70 years, 50 years, 100 years, rights of our resources, with Russia or with China. Because they can see, so they keep them in there, they support them because they're gaining benefit for their own nations from, terrible leaders like the Islamic regime. Meanwhile, they take their own benefit. So when there is weak leadership in America, they make their move. They go and push other leaders to say, hey, we don't want to deal in American dollars anymore. That's an example. So people think about ideologies and they're like, oh, no, Trump, Batman, he had sex with somebody or he talks terrible or he's a womanizer. Well, yeah, not everybody's a perfect person, but is he a patriot? Does he want the best for his own people and America? But people don't seem to people who are dominated by an ideology like the left ideology. They don't understand that. They think you're a moron for saying that. But the reality is that the world isn't revolving around your ideology. There is a bigger picture out there. Every nation in this world that is a big nation, strong, powerful, and is affecting your everyday life, has got a leader that's strong. And a lot of them are dictators. That's a fact. Not that I'm pro-dictatorship. That's why I'm in New Zealand, because I am pro-democracy and I believe that dictatorship. However, when I look at my country, it's under dictatorship and it's an ideological dictatorship, which means that they put an ideology before the good of the nation, before the good of their own people and their own country. That I have a major issue with. If there was a dictatorship in Iran, which put the Iranian people's benefit first, it put Iran as a country first, then I probably would have been living there,
And but, when you actually say that, an ideology in Iran the good of the ideology ahead of the good of the people and the good of the nation. When you actually look at the ideologies, particularly these extreme left ideologies around critical theory and climate, because there's a cult around some of the climate stuff, and I'm not talking environment, I'm talking climate. That in itself is, you know, we're close to being captured in an ideology that put the ideology ahead what's good for the people and good for the nation, don't we?
Well, that's true. If
we're not careful.
Religion, look, you know, I'm not a religious person. I respect people who believe in religion, good, but I'm not a religious person. So I look at religion in a different way. I look at it as a, you know, what came before the modern day sort of way of control or politics. And today we've got this whole ideology of the woke, you know, a whole bunch of people hate the word, but it is a factual thing, it is a label, it is the woke, which includes the gender ideology, the climate, you know, this mix. And it is another religion. But because of the year that we are in, we are not calling it a religion. We call it cult. It is the new religion. It is another religion beside Christianity, beside Islam, beside all that. It's a new religion. And people, without any question, without, you know, they believe in it. It isn't about rationality. It isn't about facts. It is about a belief. It's a belief system. You either believe in it or you don't. If you don't believe in it, then you're a heretic. You know, you're a terrible person. You're a bigot. You're this and that because you don't believe in this. It's a belief system. You know, it is not a political ideology. It's a belief system. You can't enforce your belief on other people. If you go and tell these people who believe in this ideology of climate or gender, if you say, no, look, come become Muslim because Islam says blah, blah, blah. They say, you know, you're a horrible person, or Christianity says that. Look at what's happening to Brian Tamaki. You know, he's standing for his values, which are, you know, honorable values for his faith and his belief. And nothing that he says is unreasonable. However, his ideology is looked upon as awful, bigot, dictatorship, nasty, fascism, right? But the other side is also an ideology. Mm. However, if you don't believe in it, we are the horrible heretics. Mm. It's, you know, I don't believe in religion in general. So to me, I look at them as like all in the same server. If you want to enforce your ideology on people, that's not okay. But if you say that to this new religion, you know, they label you all kinds of weird names except heretic, because they don't want to associate it with religious terminology. However, it is a religion, and I think the sooner people wake up and realize it, the better it is. You know, be honest with yourselves. Everything about it is a religion, and their church is World Economic Forum, UN, all these like entities that are promoting it. They are their churches and entities. They are the ones who are promoting this new religion. You look at it like, whenever did we ever have all these flags and months and near celebrating certain stuff, you know, but we do not.
Yeah. And I guess, and that's the thing, you know, it takes someone like you who's come from an environment that has been taken over by religious fundamentalism to see religious fundamentalism, even if it's not given that name. So look,
exactly. Hey, I think people are too wrapped up in the titles and the names and labels. Mm. I think people should sort of step back from titles and names and labels and look at the behavior. And look at, you know, indications that, you know, certain slogans and behaviors are giving you. If it walks like it, talks like it, then
yeah, exactly. Funny. Well, Gilda, time has gotten away on us as it often does. So thank you so much for your time this morning. And again, X is definitely the place to find you. You are very active across there, and your insights, I always find them fascinating. Is there anywhere else that people should check out, or X is your favorite place to be?
I don't do anything, literally. I use Instagram as a family album. I put the picture of my pets and kids in there. And I just opened Facebook like a few days ago after a few years. So I don't do anything elsewhere. I'm just on X. That's because I can connect with my friends internationally and, you know, keep up with, geopolitics and international politics and stuff like that. But yeah, it was good chatting to you.
Yeah, it's been great. And don't disappear, of course, more content, great content here to come. Marty will be along soon with Media Matters. All that and more here with Counterculture on Reality Check Radio. Thanks, Gilda.
Take care. Thanks, honey.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.